Welcome back to another episode of Tales from the Bunk Bed, a pop culture and entertainment podcast where we dig into all the stuff that kept us entertained as kids. I'm Zach.
And I'm Lucas.
And here's what we have in store for you guys this week. We are deep into the 2008 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea, and we've been enjoying the hell out of it. We are here this week to talk all about it and why we love the Winter Games so much, mostly because of the movies and also because of the games themselves, which often speak for themselves. We really do have a deep love for the Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
So much so we've been watching it a lot the last now pretty much 2 weeks.
Every day I'm at work, I put it on the TV.
Yeah.
And I know our general manager's been making snarky comments about it.
Yeah, I mean, we've been watching everything and anything. We've watched how much curling?
I love curling.
So much curling. Like, we finally figured out all how curling works. We figured out the scoring.
Yeah.
We figured it all out, and we've been having a blast watching that.
I guarantee you, by the time the next Olympics rolls around, I'm going to forget the scoring of this curling, because I'm pretty sure I did this and when Sochi was occurring.
I think I got it now. It's pretty simple now that we figured it out. I'm not going to explain it for everybody because we don't need to get into the technicals of curling.
Yeah.
But that's the level of excitement we've been for the Olympics. I've been watching pretty much everything. It's been a pretty exciting 2018 Olympics.
Yeah, I think it's been pretty fun.
Been a lot of cool things. For the U.S., we've been dominating snowboarding.
Yeah.
That was what was probably the most fun of that first week, was you started with slopestyle.
Absolutely.
Which that
Red Gerard
won gold, the 17-year-old American, after almost oversleeping and missing his event because he just stayed up late watching Netflix.
See, this was making me a little mad. They were saying that he was up watching Netflix, but he's quoted an interview saying he was watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
So he was watching Hulu.
Exactly.
Semantics. Yeah, came out, dropped his first two runs. He fell his first two runs, didn't complete them,
yeah.
So he didn't get a qualifying score. And then his last run, which was like third or fourth last for the whole competition, just nails the entire thing. Because that was a really good event. The course looked awesome. It was really cool.
The course was very creative.
And it was definitely difficult because they were all, like, the highest scores were in the 80s. And typically they were saying these guys score in, like, the mid to high 90s.
There were a lot of falls. It seemed like they weren't as comfortable with it, maybe, because they weren't throwing down their biggest tricks. And if they were, a lot of them were slipping or their boards were kicking out or something.
I mean, the end of the slopestyle run, which if anyone doesn't know, it's basically just a big downhill run with a bunch of, it's at the top, it's a bunch of like rails, boxes, and little kicker jumps. And as it gets further down, the jumps just get bigger and bigger, basically.
Yep.
And once they get past the rail sections, which has that like really cool box, they're all like doing flips and stuff off. It's just, it goes into the Wu-Tang jump, and it's like three big air jumps in a row, basically. So
yeah.
I feel like by the last one, they were all just like off their edge or lost their balance or just going too fast.
Because I think there's five total like obstacles that you hit in different steps, which, I mean, if you think about it, they're trying to throw down the biggest things they can at each one of these. By the time you get to the last jump, they're usually pretty out of breath, or they're not necessarily perfectly balanced. Something usually goes wrong.
Well, yeah, because I mean, it's almost, their runs are almost like a routine because they have, they know these they've worked these courses where they basically plan a run that they're going to try and do, the run they think is going to get them the best score.
Yeah.
So they're basically, they're following a line that they're expecting to hit everything, and the minute they don't hit something, they're offline and they have to course correct and try and get back and fix their run. And this is, I mean, they do it men's, women's, both skiing and snowboarding. I don't know if you saw it. The skiing was pretty wild on it too. I saw a little bit of that. But that was like second or third day. It was like third day. I think that was Sunday or Saturday night, right after they kicked off the Olympics. That was one of the first big events, and it was really awesome watching him win that gold. 17 years old, wins the first U.S. gold of the Olympics.
That was really cool. He had a little Sean White moment when Sean White won his first goal and he was on the interview saying he was drinking on the plane or whatever. He was on Jimmy Kimmel like a day or two after he won the gold and he was talking about, he was like telling Jimmy Kimmel how his family shotguns beers with their thumb by pressing into it. And he just goes, I'll have to remind you, you're 17 years old.
Oh, I love snowboarding culture. It's great. And we'll keep with it and with the 17-year-olds because then Chloe Kim wins women's half pipe with her gnarly run.
I was 17 really years old. Into that half pipe event. I was watching that. I was watching that with our mom, and she was having a lot of fun with it. And I was rooting for Maddie Maestro, who was another U.S. girl. She was throwing down some crazy stuff, but she just couldn't stick the landing on. Because I think she would go up off the first, like the first jump she'd hit or the first wall. I think she tried to throw it on a 1080 all three runs, and I think she hit it once.
That's a tough way to open it up.
Yeah.
Oh man, but yeah, Chloe Kim, 17, another 17-year-old going out and just nailing her run and taking home another gold for the U.S., which was awesome.
Yeah, that was real cool.
Some really cool. The half pipe was just was crazy to watch this year in general. Women's competition was awesome. Then obviously the men's competition, whereas everyone knows Sean White took home the gold, but it wasn't like, I remember going into it, I was kind of like, Sean White's gonna win this. Like we all saw his qualifier runs that were like perfect scores,
100,
looked amazing. It's like he's gonna win this, and then his first run goes out. Nails everything, puts down like a 95 score, and we're like, I think he just won it on the first run.
Yeah, I think it was like a 93.75.
That's what I said. I was like, he just won it on the first run. He crazy run. And then I think it was the third round, the one Japanese kid.
Yes, took him over.
It was his third run, right? It wasn't his second run.
Yeah, it was third run.
Third run goes down, and dude, his run was nuts.
Yeah.
It was back to back 1440s and the back to back 1260s.
Yeah.
Which is nuts, puts up like a 96 or whatever it was. And then, and that's like halfway through the round, Sean White comes out and lays down an insane, because they both did the same. They went back to back 1440s into back to back 1260s. But Sean White has that like
double
cork?
McTwist.
McTwist. Yeah. He does that crazy flip when he's doing it and he nailed his
it
last run.
Wild.
It was so clean. Yeah. It was so perfect. Holy shit, man.
See, I don't know. Like, it's got to be weird going into it for these guys because you got to think that, like, Sean White obviously had that first run, like, planned out. He was like, okay, I'm going to do this and try and hit it as hard as I can. And he does it, and he lands it very cleanly. And then he's got to go out for two more runs, and he's got to make it even better, which is ridiculous because normally they're throwing out the best that they can do on the first run, and then he even one-ups himself, which is wild.
Well, yeah, that's what's fun about a lot of these competitions in general, but especially for us with snowboarding because we so close to it as well. But the improvisation on the fly with that, where they all have these runs, and like with slopestyle this year, because it was so difficult, it was mostly watching them all just try and nail their run because it was so hard for them. But typically, if they nail their run, like you said, on the first ride out, and someone bests them. I mean, you can't go out and do the same run.
No.
You have to like know what you're gonna do. Like you have to sit there and edit your run, your routine basically on the fly, and be like, "How can I make this better right now? What can I do that I know I can do something better than what I did?" And Sean White went for it, and he fucking nailed it because he fell on his second run.
Yeah,
and then the Japanese kid took over, and we're like, "Oh shit, he's got one run to win it. If he didn't nail that run,
and
that was it.
He was the last snowboarder up, too.
Yep, because he had best scores in qualifiers, so he got to be the last, which he always likes to be.
Yeah,
and nailed it, man. What a run! I love snowboard half pipe.
He's insane.
Yeah, he is insane.
What do you think? We got one more Olympics out of Sean White?
I think he's going at least one more after winning the gold. But yeah, I think he'll be 35 at the next one.
It's wild.
Yeah. He'll only be 35 at the next one, too. That's because he's been there for so long.
He's one of the older Olympians, for
sure.
Pro
snowboarder. First X Games was at 15 for snowboarding. Pro skateboarder at 17. Got his first snowboard sponsorship at 7 years old after starting snowboarding at 6 years old.
That's weird.
Crazy. Dude is
that's some
insane.
Kid who's fearless.
Yeah, and also just like totally naturally talented to be on a board and do ridiculous shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, it's so good. I loved all the snowboarding stuff that I've watched so far.
The
I don't think
is wild.
Yeah, the pipe is nuts. I don't like the one dude, one of the other Japanese guys, his opening move was just coming out and doing this huge backside big air.
Yeah.
And it was nuts. He would just go and get as high as he
could
in the air.
I want to say like almost 30 feet or something.
It was something like, because they had the sensors on their ankles, so they could actually get the exact height they were going. Those guys are fearless. It's nuts.
Those are wild, though, because you think you go up, and if you just, if you, like, you're expecting to do a 1260 or whatever, and you land a little, lower on the ramp, or you land awkwardly and you lose a lot of speed, you got to go into your next jump, and you got to, right there within like 2 seconds, you got to figure out what you're going to do on this next jump, because half the time something goes wrong or it's not perfect and you don't have enough speed to hit that next 1260 or whatever you're going to hit. It's ridiculous how quickly these dudes have to think.
And we're talking about, like I said, the two best runs in men's half pipe. They hit back to back 1440, back to back 1260. I remember when Sean White hit the first 1080 on a snowboard half pipe in the early 2000s at the X Games, and it was like the craziest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And now these guys are laying down 1440s. Like, go fuck yourself. It is nuts. I don't know how they do it. It's crazy.
They're just getting better and better as time goes on, which is wild.
Well, that's the thing about snowboarding, is at least in this sort of competition, it's still such a young sport.
Yeah.
So it's evolving so fast and just getting crazier and crazier. Can't wait to see where we're at in another 10 years. When guys like Red Gerard are now only 27 years old.
Yep.
It's awesome.
I think he'll probably be in the pipe with at the next Olympics, just because he made such a splash in the slope style. And in the interview he had, he said like he's done pipe before. It's just he's not like familiar enough with it to go to the Olympics.
He's got 4 years to get real familiar with
exactly
that pipe.
And he's talented enough where he can do it.
Yeah,
so he'll be there.
Do you remember when Sean White he probably still has it, the freaking private half pipe that Red Bull has, like on the side of that one mountain where they like get choppered out to it? Have you ever seen that?
No.
There's like if you could like YouTube it. I think it was around when his video game came out. And it was like, I think Target and Red Bull like built this private half pipe on the side of this one mountain for him. And there's like a short video of them like flying him out. I think you can go to it in the Sean White game.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know how long it lasted, but I know at one point, and I'm sure he does have his basically own private half pipe to train on, with how big he is. But yeah, snowboarding is nuts. I can't wait to see more of it in 4 years from these guys. But what else have you been watching? There's been a lot.
I mean, obviously, the hockey. I was big into. I'm a huge hockey fan.
Yep. All right,
and
America.
I was excited. Yeah, I was excited that the college kids were getting a shot, and some of the lesser known guys. I really like Sapolsky, the goalie for the U.S. I had a lot of fun watching that game last night. They played really sloppy. I don't know who the coach was, but yeah, it was a real disappointing last night, watching them lose in a shootout to the Czechs. It's a little disappointing just because these guys literally played on the team for the first time together when they got to Pyeongchang. So kind of sucks. You wish it's like Miracle where they got to play together for like even like 3 months before the Olympics, because they probably would have been much stronger as a unit, and because their defensive core looked really bad this year, which was really disappointing. But that, I really have only watched U.S. games so far in the Olympics. I haven't really been checking out anyone else. But
yeah.
I saw the Swiss lost to Germany, and so now in the quarterfinals, it's Canada, Germany, the Czechs, and the Russians.
Interesting. I know it's been like an interesting tournament, but the thing is, the athletes of Russia are basically, I mean, it's still most of the Russian hockey team, because they got like Datsyuk and Kovalchuk and guys like that. And I mean, they definitely still have the leg up, so it's tough for anyone to best them. But it's been interesting. It would have been nice if this team got to play together a little more and actually be more prepared for this. Because the first game they lost in overtime.
Yep.
And you could just tell, like, it's because they weren't there. They weren't trained enough.
That first game showed they were gassed at the end of the game. And even last night, watching them play the Czechs, you could tell that they were running out of steam. And even at the end of the third period, they were really, really out of it. And then overtime, they were making silly mistakes. So disappointing. Yeah. I wanted him to pull it out so bad.
And I mean, like, that's the thing, for, especially for the U.S. team. Like, they needed, for the Olympics, they need to train together because, I mean, just the bigger size of the rink these guys are working on.
Exactly.
And it's, it doesn't matter that they're playing college or juniors when they're here up until they left. Like, they're playing on NHL rinks. They're not playing on an Olympic rink.
I want to say it's 10 feet wider, the Olympic rinks.
You can tell just by looking at it that it's wide, especially once they go to 3-on-3 in overtime.
Yeah, when I used to play... Whoa. When I used to play when I was younger at the local hockey rink, they had three NHL size rinks and then they had one Olympic size rink, and you'd play on the Olympic rink for like for a game like once a year, and you might have one practice on it a year. And that game, if your team wasn't fast, if whoever the faster team was, whenever you played on the Olympic rink, that faster team would win. Just because there is so much more space, and that simple like with the simple width that the Olympic rink has that the NHL rink doesn't really, really makes a difference. And, I mean, you can tell with these college kids, they really were not utilizing all the space and everything. Yeah. And the defensive core was not ready for it.
Yeah, it's a different type of game on an Olympic rink. But, yeah, hopefully we'll see what happens in 4 years from now if the NHL decides to keep stonewalling or if they do this again. We'll see what happens. Hopefully it works out better for the U.S. next time, whatever it is.
Yeah, seriously. They need Phil Kessel.
Yeah. I've been going through a lot of random stuff because if you go on like the NBC Sports app, you can just like watch events. It's like we were watching a bunch of like, replays and stuff. So we're watching like the biathlon and stuff, which the biathlon is one of my favorite random winter Olympic events, which is just cross country skiing where two times they have to shoot targets, one time laying down and one time standing up. And it gets way more intense than you would think. They're launching skiers every like 30 seconds or a minute, whatever it is. So there's like, it's 80 people competing it. And it's just all these people going and shooting guns, and the announcers do a good job getting you into it. We watched like it was like a 2.5 hour competition. We watched the entire thing.
Yeah, I remember on Sunday. I think I did. When Sochi was on 4 years ago, I remember sitting in the family room with our dad watching the biathlon, and he was like enamored with it because he always loves to tell the story about him cross country skiing. He's like, man, that's a lot of work.
It is, and you could tell that it's a lot of work watching them do it. It doesn't. It's one of those things. It doesn't look easy.
They look like they're about to hack up a lung.
Yep. Oh my God. That's the best part is when they cross the finish line. Even if they've just taken the number one, they all immediately just fall down.
Yep.
And just like go face first into the ground. You could tell they're just like hyperventilating. Like, please let me get air in my lungs. I'm dying. Because especially the final stretch, they sprint because it's a time trial. So you're just trying to make up as much ground as you can. And they just get in and they're just like hawking loogies and hawking up a lung. It's so amusing. I love that. We were watching speed skating relays the other day.
Those
which
are
is
wild. I didn't even know they did
intense,
relays in
right?
speed skating. They just throw each other.
It's like 20 people on an Olympic size rink. So it's not like the other speed skating where it's on that big almost track like rink. This is on just like an Olympic rink, and there's like three little circles, and they're just going.
Yeah,
and it's nuts.
It reminds
me
of Talladega Nights when they like link up, and the person who's taken over is in the front, and the guy who just skated just pushes him as far as he can, and they just shotgun and just fly up real quick. It's real funny.
It's wild. It's a fun one. Definitely, people should get into that more. Obviously, Luge, Skeleton are always amusing because people look like they're about to die. The one girl, the one crazy. U.S. girl in Luge, singles Luge, she went into the wall, and it looked like her freaking ankles just snapped. She walked away from it. She went feet first up into the top wall, and when they do it somewhere, look at her ankles just cracked in half. Walked away from it. She's like, I'm sore, Christ. But she got up and walked away from it. This is nuts.
I think there was one at Sochi. Someone actually died. I think it was in the Skeleton. Is that the face first one?
Yeah.
I think it was in Skeleton. They went off the edge and went right into a wall.
Yo, Skeleton's it's nuts.
Ridiculously dangerous watching these people. Like, you're like, holy shit, please survive. That's what you're hoping for in the Skeleton and the Luge. Cause
Especially Skeleton.
There's no, like, you're just on like a flat sled with two like skates at the bottom of it, and there's no protection around you. It's just your body. You're holding on to this thing for dear life. It's ridiculous. You make one, if you fuck up once. Oh my God. It's not
endable. It's a terrifying sport. It's terrifying, terrifying. bobsledding is going on now. That finally started. We were watching women's doubles last night. You had Team Jamaica, which was fun.
And then the U.S. They were flying. Well, we were
talking about it. Is Jamaica, where did they end up placing? Like 15th?
I think so.
And they were not even a full second away
A second.
Yeah.
They were half of a second behind the first place team, and they were 15th place.
Yeah, the discrepancies in bobsled is nuts how close the times are on that. It's a crazy competitive sport. Yeah,
it's gotten real competitive recently.
Yeah, it's nuts. Oh, man, I can't believe it sometimes. You also had, I mean, there was the figure skaters. I keep forgetting both of their names. The girl who won, and then the guy who has been, like, all over the media and shit because, like, he had, like, a really good performance. I think he came in, like, second or third. And he, like, shut down Pence for to, like, meet with him at the Olympics because he's openly gay.
I didn't hear about that.
I can't remember. I keep forgetting both of their names, but they're both awesome. And they've been on, like, social media since they both won and have just been the best. great. Just people, the athletes themselves being generally great at the Olympics this year, which is really good, too.
The athletes have been great. But the figure skating is one that I know you and I don't get into a lot, but I know my girlfriend and her family, our mom, they really get into it. Mm-hmm. I will come home and there'll be some on and I'll like sit down for 20 minutes and watch it. And there's the one, I think their brother-sister pair from the U.S., which obviously reminds us of one of our movies later on, Blades of Glory.
Later on, it was last
episode. Oh, my God. Last episode. Woo. Little brain fart there. That was...
It's Johnson Fairchild.
Yeah, that's an entertaining one. And then there was... I come home the other night and our dad's trying to tell me about the French team, I think it was. They were doing... It was the pairs. And they were doing their routine and the girl had a wardrobe malfunction and just went through the whole routine. And he was talking about how the judges, they go through like each of, because there's like 8 moves that they judge like very precisely. And they go through and they watch them in slow motion and they play them on the Jumbotron at the arena. So even if like you're filming the camera on the rink, you can see it. And it's slow motion, like these 8 jumps. And the camera just had to, or the NBC live shot had to like cut away and go to like a wide shot of the entire Olympic like area rather than showing that just because it was just out. So that was another little flub in the Olympics this year.
Yeah, figure skating is interesting. I did see the first were they from North Korea? The figure skating duos. They ended up coming in second place, I think, and were really, really good.
Did they perfect the Iron Lotus?
They did not. But they were good, and they ended up placing and getting a medal, and it was their first time at the Olympics, and that was really cool. There's been a bunch of stuff like that of, like, nations competing in things for the first time and actually being pretty good.
The South Korean hockey team, they scored 2 goals against, I think, Sweden, and, like, they were going nuts.
Yep.
And the coach was crying at the end of the game.
Well, didn't they? They just started learning hockey like a few years ago. Yep. Not even like, this is like first generation hockey players in Korea right now. They're the first.
But they scored 2 goals back to back in the third period. And when the guy scored, like everyone cleared off the bench for the first one. They were freaking out, and they did the same thing for the second one.
We saw it in the speed skating relay the other day when they won. Yep. They were all crying and going nuts. Like they're winning in events or just
they won,
like actually,
second place, I think.
Yeah, and actually like compete. No, she won. Remember?
Oh right, she beat the Chinese. Yeah, that's what it was.
And like they've been very into this.
Yeah.
Anytime they win or do anything of note. Right now, at home in the Olympics, they're just going nuts for
it's
it.
It's very cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's really cool to see that. There's been some other silly things going on. The North Koreans had their cheerleaders in the one arena. You heard about that?
Yeah. We don't need to give any points to North Korea.
Oh my
they
God.
Suck.
They were all dressed the same. They had choreographed chants and stuff.
I know.
Stuff.
It was
ridiculous. And those are supposed to be like their fans.
Forced to be there probably.
Oh yeah, they were all young females.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I haven't gotten to watch much. I got to go back and watch some other events. I haven't watched really much of the skiing. Like, I want to watch some ski jumping and stuff like that.
I've watched a little of the ski jumping. I didn't do a lot.
Yeah.
Just because I get terrified thinking about
that. That's another one where you're about to just watch people die.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So, I mean, that's what it is. I've seen people joke about it all the time whenever the Winter Olympics come around, how, like, the Summer Olympics are just, like, these nice, kind of boring events.
Who's the fastest?
Yeah, and then the Winter Olympics comes down, and it's like, test your life. See if you can survive your event. Can you live through it? If so, you might get a medal.
Who can survive the 90-meter jump?
Yeah, like skeleton luge. It's like, you might die this time.
Go every 80 time. Miles an yeah. hour, face first down an ice track.
You may die this time. You've been doing this your whole life, but every time, you might die. It's like basically an entire competition of just like stuntmen and daredevils doing the craziest shit you can imagine.
And then there's the people. Did you hear about that? Technically, she's an American, but she represented Hungary at the Olympics in the skiing half pipe.
No.
You didn't hear about this? Okay. So this girl, she found a loophole in the system where if she went through qualifiers and didn't fall, somehow representing Hungary, if she went through like a few tournaments, she would qualify for the Hungarian national team. And she went through, didn't fall on any of her runs because she was just going up one side of the slope and coming back down and just hopping, getting like a foot of air on each wall and then coming down and just didn't fall on any run. So she got to go to the Olympics. And what did she do when she got to the Olympics? Just up and down, back and forth, no tricks, nothing. Oh, so that was another entertaining one. I thought that was kind of funny.
That's amusing. I mean, I'd get annoyed by stuff like that if the Olympic committees didn't suck balls. So, like, anytime you can stick it to them or something like that,
great. I think she might have been, or at least from what I've seen, I think that's, like, one of the few Hungarian athletes at the Olympics this year.
Yeah, there's not much Winter Olympic stuff for them to do in Hungary.
No.
So 2018 games have been a lot of fun. Are they wrapping up this weekend?
I want to say, this weekend.
We're coming on towards the end. Because we're getting towards the end of the hockey tournament, and that usually takes you through to the close. And that and bobsledding are like two of the final things going on.
Yeah.
But it's been great. I mean, two and a half straight weeks of just events all the time, stuff to watch.
You know cool what? Things. One thing we haven't, I know neither of us have watched.
What?
Is the big air.
No.
The snowboarding or skiing big air. Because I completely forgot about it. I'm sure you did too. Because I think it was added pretty recently, but that's something we haven't watched that definitely gets our attention, and I'm sure we will go back and watch reruns of it or the coverage that's on BCSN.
We'll definitely check out the big air. That's always nuts. Another event where it's like, let's watch people almost die. Quick side tangent on big air, if we're going to talk about the ones where you're watching people die, the craziest big air will always be skateboarding at the X Games. I do not get why people do that. And remember, who was it who we watched almost die and his shoes flew off? Do you remember his name?
It was Jake something.
Jake something. We've talked about this before. He freaking went up, went straight down, landed on his back, and his shoes flew off. He hit the ground so hard.
And he walked away.
Oh, man. Yeah, dude, big air is nuts. Danny Way was always nuts at it. Bob Burnquist.
Bob Burnquist at 40 years old would jump the big jump. He would just jump it, wouldn't touch his board. And he would go down switch. So he would go down backwards. And not touch his board and just coast through the air at like 60 miles an hour without touching his board, hoping it just stuck to his feet, which is insane. I don't understand how people do that.
Oh my God, it's nuts. Big air is nuts. We love extreme sports, to say the least. So let's move from that into the Bogler Show, which is all just Olympic stuff because that's what we're going to talk about. But as you could clearly tell from us talking about the 2018 Olympics, we have a love for all of the actual sports in these games, so they speak for themselves on that front why we love the Winter Games. But it has always solidified it the movies, basically, that have come perfectly timed throughout our childhood to make us love the Winter Olympics even more and other entertainment. Because before we get into the three movies we have to talk about, we just wanted to mention this real quick because we did, in 2006, put in a decent amount of time on this little game.
Yeah.
They did it again this year. Every time there's an Olympics, they make a quickly put together video game for it.
Yep.
And we had the video game for Torino 2006, the Torino Olympics in Italy.
On our PlayStation 2.
Yes, we did. And we played a decent amount of it. And this, I feel like, is where my love for bobsledding became even stronger. I mean, there's obvious reasons we'll get into in a little bit. But, like, you could play the bobsled on here. You could do alpine skiing. You could do, which was downhill, super G, giant slalom and slalom, ski jumping, cross-country skiing, biathlon, luge, bobsled, and speed skating. I don't think we knew what biathlon was at the time, so we never really played it, which now bums me out because I love the biathlon.
I think I played it once, and I was like, this is too difficult. Because this game, obviously, it was thrown together very quickly, wasn't the easiest playable game.
Yeah, we basically did bobsledding and ski jumping.
Yep. That's exactly
because snowboard slalom was too damn hard to get in between the flags.
I remember trying the ski one, and it was like you had to like pull hard to get your guy to get over to the other
it was not totem fun. Or whatever. That part was hard as shit. Yeah. But ski jumping and bobsledding, fun as hell.
Yeah.
I don't know. Those games are always amusing. They have one out now for the current Olympics, which is like kind of amusing and tempting to just.
It was Steep 2, which was initially like a snowboard video game that was kind of like your Shaun White snowboarding.
Yeah.
Because I remember thinking about buying it when I saw it come out, and it dropped price real quick, and I was like, okay, this probably isn't great. But, I saw the ad today on Instagram, and it was like Steep 2, the Winter Games, and it was like, there was like interviews with Lindsey Vonn or whatever, and it would show her like going down to do her Super G or whatever, the giant slalom.
Yes.
And I don't know. I'm interested. That piqued my interest a little bit.
That stuff's always fun.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Which we will be talking more about winter video games next episode. but we just wanted to mention that game because we did. I mean, we had a lot of fun playing it.
Yeah, it was one that our Uncle Bobby had gotten for us. And I just remember throwing a decent amount of time into it. So if we were talking about the Winter Olympics, this was one we definitely had to give a little shout out to.
Oh, yeah. All right, so three movies we have to talk about. We're not going to go in order of release. We're going to go in order of Olympics.
Yeah.
Mostly because two of them are pretty similar, and we want to talk about those similarities. So the first movie we are going to talk about is the 2004 classic directed by Gavin O'Connor, Miracle.
Want to hear an amazing story? Back in 1960, Coach Brooks was on the Olympic hockey team. But a week before the games, his coach cuts him and sends him home. And that team went on to win the gold medal without him.
Herb Brooks had given up his dream of Olympic glory until 20 ordinary kids.
Why'd you want to play hockey?
Isn't it obvious? For the girls?
Gave him a second chance.
The Soviets win. My goal is to beat them at their own game.
Beat the best team in the world.
Gold medalists in 64, 68, 72, 76.
Name? Mark Johnson.
Buzzy Schneider.
Mike Ruzioni.
You're missing some of the best players.
I'm not looking for the best players, Craig. I'm looking for the right ones.
Starring Kurt Russell as Herb Brooks, the coach of the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team, who, as everybody knows, famously beat the Russian team in the Olympic competition in the, quote, miracle hockey game.
Yep.
The event itself is insane. At this point, we know so much about the Red Army hockey team that it's like these guys played together for – they're basically military. Yep. And instead of being in, like, the Army or the Marines, their enlistment was hockey.
Yeah.
That's what their lives were. They were literally – they had to train just like they were in the – like, they had to train for all this stuff. They were part of the state. They were not, like – it's not like in our country with it was – they were this extension of the Soviet Union.
The Chinese actually adopted this form of, like, physical education in their schooling and stuff. Where basically if you are a skilled athlete, you go to these special sports schools where literally all you do for like 8 hours a day is exercise and become more skilled at your craft, whether it be hockey or basketball or whatever. That's what they do is they send you to special schools. You'll study for like an hour a day on schooling, very basic schooling, and then they'll just throw you into your sports for the rest of the remainder of the day.
Mm-hmm. So with Miracle, basically – Herb Brooks was a coach in Minnesota.
Yep.
Yes. Golden Gophers. And he got the job for the U.S. Olympic hockey team. And it was just like this year. There's no, the NHL was not going to be taking part in the Olympics.
Yeah.
So they weren't building an all-star team. They had to build a team out of young college kids and amateurs. So he came in, gets the job, picks his team in kind of unconventionally. He goes in, he knows his team after the first day of tryouts.
Yep.
Puts his team together, that leaving out like half of the quote-unquote best players, and claiming that it was he didn't need the best guys, he needed the right guys. That's like one of the things he keeps saying in this movie. And he fields this hockey team of super young, talented guys that become a family and go on to beat the greatest hockey team in the world. And like the point is made perfectly in the movie of why he does this, when they just show the highlight of the Russians beating the NHL All-Star team like 7-1 or whatever. Yeah. It was something obnoxious. Like, they took the best hockey players in the world that they thought, at least what they thought, and they got trounced by this team. So pretty easy to say we're going into that game, into those Olympics with nobody. And I mean, not to mention, as we were talking about, they play Russia right before the Olympics and lose.
Yeah, 10 days before.
Nobody thought they were going to beat this team.
No.
Nobody thought they had a chance in hell at beating this team.
Didn't they lose 10-3, I think, in the exhibition match they had 10 days before the Olympics?
Yeah, it was nuts. So this is a brief little history on the event itself, if you're not totally familiar with it. But the movie does a pretty – it's admittedly a kind of paint-by-the-numbers biopic, but it's doing it very, very well, and it picks a story with enough – social and political context as well, that it gets to be more than just like, oh, this is what the guy did in his life, because obviously it's taking place in 1980, height of the Cold War. It's the U.S. versus the Soviet Union.
Yeah, one of the big issues with the Olympics, or at least for the U.S. hockey team, is that there were rumors that because whoever the president was at the time said he wasn't going to take or participate in the Olympics in the next year, because I think they were in Russia.
Yes.
And so they thought that the Soviets weren't going to come to the United States and Lake Placid to compete there. So
yep.
They wanted to beat the best in the world, and they were afraid they weren't going to be there.
Yep, they were afraid they were saying, because that's the thing. When Herb first goes into the meetings, he says his goal is to beat the Russians.
Yep.
I'm like, that's a lofty goal, and he's like, that's why I have it. And it's like, his goal from the square one was beat the Russians. The movie casts Kurt Russell as Herb Brooks, which is Kurt Russell's the man. Everybody loves Kurt Russell, but it ends up being the perfect casting. He puts away his what everyone thinks of Kurt Russell from the 80s, the long hair, the charisma, the charm, and he gets a dad haircut, puts on a stern face, and pulls up his jeans, and he really is like, he's Herb Brooks. He becomes this guy.
His plaid suits.
Yep. Oh, the suits. Those suit coats are the best. Oh, yeah. I love them so much. And he's fantastic as Herb Brooks.
Absolutely.
He nails every moment of this. He nails when he has to be a good guy, when he has to be the worst guy.
Obviously, the speech is one of the most quotable things. I know I know many of my friends will, in random times, I don't even remember it, Jesus Christ. But they just start quoting it right off the top of their head.
Yeah, no, he was, I mean, it's probably the most iconic hockey game to ever be played.
Yep.
Any hockey fan can tell you, or any hockey player especially, but any diehard hockey fan can basically tell you anything you want about it, because we all know about it so well. The movie casts everyone very well. You get Noah Emmerich as Craig Patrick, his assistant coach, who is great. He does a really good job at playing the second in command, who has to kind of clash with him at times,
and
other times just kind of notice the subtle genius that he has going on.
Yep.
There's a bunch of times where you see Noah Emmerich give those little smirks, where after, like when he comes in the middle of the one game and just starts insulting everybody. It's the game where is that O'Callaghan or McClanahan? They all have so many similar names. The one of them, he gets injured. He gets a bruised leg, and he's like, can he play? And he's like, well, it really hurt. And he goes in, and he basically just calls him a Nancy.
Yep.
And starts screaming at everybody. And he walks out right past Craig, and he goes, let's see what that does to him. And Patrick's just sitting there with this big grin on his face, because he knows the guy's a genius. And there's really only one moment in the movie where he questions it a little bit, and we'll get to it in a little bit, because I don't want to talk about that yet. Patricia Clarkson is Patty Brooks, Herb Brooks' wife, and she's very good in the scene she has, as she always is. But what is really interesting about this movie, and what I learned just recently watching some of the special features, and when you definitely notice watching this movie is the hockey scenes look great.
Yes.
In which there is a lot. What I love about this movie is, especially, I mean, the final game is the last 35, 40 minutes of the movie. Most, like, it's a, like a 30-minute hockey game that they show you at the end.
They show a lot.
They show a lot of each period and each, like, they're not shying away. It's a lot of action, a lot of on-ice action. And you don't, that's the one thing that a lot of sports movies will shy away from. They want to fill with story and not do, like, scenes of the sports as much. There have been other, like, Friday Night Lights does that too. The final game is like a big part of that movie, and it's really, really well done. But what I learned watching the special features is, aside from creating like a bunch of new camera dollies, and like they basically took a dolly and put it on a sled so they could go around the ice and get like 360 camera views, and that's how they get like the close-ups of the puck on the ice and stuff. So you get a lot of really cool camera angles you've never seen, not only in a movie but in hockey especially. But to make it work even better in the casting, which is, this is another reason why you, if you ever wonder why I haven't seen a lot of these guys pop up in anything after this, is they casted hockey players. They needed people who could play hockey at a certain skill level.
Yeah.
So they were casting people that could act but could also play hockey. And that's how they filled out their team, because they had to be able to be good enough hockey players so they could film it and make it believable. They weren't trying to make the Mighty Ducks hockey scenes. They wanted to make this real. Like, they were recreating moments from the Miracle Game almost beat for beat. They had to have these kids had to be able to do it, and it works really, really well. That's one of those things that, like, when I was learning about it, I was like, wow, that's actually awesome, like, that they did that. And you kind of always wonder when you watch like sports movies and stuff, especially something like hockey where you have people playing hockey, it's like, are these just like a bunch of extras that they got from like a rink just to like play skate around?
Yeah.
Are they actually, cause sometimes it'll actually be like hockey players and stuff that they got to do it. Especially if they're just like background people, they're not talking lines. But it was cool to see that they just straight up got a bunch of kids who could play and then literally choreographed hockey scenes. That's what's like, they had to like, because obviously hockey and sports in general are very of the, I mean, you're not choreographed. It's very of the moment. You're playing. It's in the heat of the moment. And they had to choreograph that basically. I'm like, well, we have to make this play and you have to run this play a specific way, but it also has to look like an actual hockey. Like, it has to look like a breakout. It can't look like you guys are all just following cues. It has to be hockey.
Yeah.
But we also have, because we have to film these multiple times, it has to be a choreographed action sequence, essentially. So that was really cool, and it's very effective because the final game is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, any time they're on the ice, whether it be in practice or in the exhibition game or the earlier rounds in the Olympics, it's really good. The movement on the ice is, they do it really well. They have, like, whether it be the camera overhead or just following right behind the puck, it's really cool to see, like you were saying. This is obviously everyone's one of their favorite hockey movies, mainly, I think, because of these hockey action scenes. They make it look so cool. It makes it, like you were saying,
and it's real hockey.
Real realistic, yeah.
Because that's the biggest problem with sports movies, especially when you're someone who's played that sport. You watch it and you get to those scenes like, well, this isn't how you play. Like, this isn't how this – like, growing up with – Ricky and Peter across the street, big hockey family, they didn't like Ricky didn't like the Mighty Ducks because the hockey scenes were like, they're ridiculous. I mean, they're like flipping each other over their backs and shit.
Yep.
They're outlandish hockey scenes, and he didn't like them because of that, because it wasn't real hockey. Miracle, he loved to death, and that definitely played a part in it because the hockey scenes are very good. And very realistic in every point, whether it be from what's going on the bench with Herb and the players and changing lines, everything. Like, on a technical level, the movie gets the sport it is portraying very, very well, which is why it succeeds more than most sports biopics and is memorable. You get, it does that very well. And then also you have, like we said, with all the Cold War stuff and the social political stuff, it doesn't shy away from that. Like, they're not shying away from the fact that this game was more than a game. Herb says it multiple times in the movie that this is more than just a hockey game.
Yeah. And then
like, at this point, this has escalated to far more than a hockey game.
And that definitely comes full circle at the end of the movie with the crowd just going nuts.
Oh my God. The end of this movie. Oh, it's so good. Yeah. You want to talk about just like great movies that make you feel incredible. The ending of this movie, the end of that game is just like, oh, it's so good. And like when the Russian coach looks at him and he just kind of gives him that nod.
Yeah.
After he was like panicking for the last 2 minutes of the game. Because
those are some of my
favorite
shots.
Oh my God.
When they were scoring on him and like it was tied or the U.S.
When he starts panicking.
Yeah.
And he's like looking
back and forth, kind of pacing.
And then Herb Brooks has that smile on his face and he just goes, he doesn't know what to do because they've never been down in the game in the final minutes.
They didn't even know to pull the goalie.
So he's like, they don't know what to do. They don't know how to like finish a game when they're not already winning. They didn't know. It's like, it's incredible. It is such, I mean, the story is just so incredible that it was a no-brainer to make it into a movie. And then you cast it so well and you execute everything so well. Like the end of that movie works because it's been so technically, like the movie is on a technical level with the hockey has been so good that when you get to the final moments like that, and they've done, like they've showed them pulling goalies, like Craig gets pulled in one of the games and stuff like that. You know, you're like, wait, why aren't the Russians pulling their goalie? Why aren't they doing this? And you're just like, and he just like chugs, like they don't know what to do. And you're just like, it is the best.
And they do a good job. Like if you're not like super familiar with hockey, they do a good job explaining stuff. Like when Craig gets pulled earlier in the game, the announcer for the game or whatever, he says, oh, they're pulling the goalie to get the extra skater out there, blah, blah, blah.
Yes. Like, it really, like, the game, the movie does a good job of explaining hockey to you without explaining hockey to you.
It's very subtle. Yeah. They do a really good job with that.
It's visual exposition. They're not just having a guy spout words. You'd be like, this is how hockey's played. Yeah. It's just throughout the movie, they're dropping the hockey knowledge you need to know. So when you get to the end of the movie, you know enough about hockey where you will pick up on these things.
Yep.
Very, very good. I love that. And then, like, as we're getting to with this scene, it is like the emotional weight of the final scene. What this movie does nails as well for being a sports biopic is those emotional moments, because the two or three of my favorite moments outside of the end of the movie, obviously, is the scene, Christmas scene, where they give each other presents and then they play football. The scene where he cuts Cox, which is the final cut, because that's like, oh, it's a gut punch, and you know that's what's happened to Herb. Like, all these things, super emotional, done really well, and, like, I love that. But it's all – those two scenes are made super heavy because of, again, the scene after the game in Norway or Sweden where he just runs them sprints after because they get their ass kicked, and they weren't they were just, like, slacking off the whole game. So he just does wind sprints until they shut the lights off. They still do wind sprints until you get the fucking great Mike Ruzioni moment where the whole movie he's been asking everybody where they're from and who they play for.
Yeah.
And they name their hometown and their home team. And then finally, at the end of all these sprints, he's about to blow his whistle again. Fucking Ruzioni. Mike Ruzioni. Team USA. It's like, oh my God, it's such
captain.
A good. Yes,
captain USA.
Oh, it's so good. It's amazing.
He says,
those moments.
Mike Ruzioni. I play for the United States of America. And it's like a great uplifting feeling that you get out of that. You got to love it.
And a great payoff because like the whole movie, he's just like, he asked that question early on and you're just kind of like, okay, like, is he just like trying to get these guys to like know each other? Like where you're from, who you know, get to know each other. It's just like an icebreaker thing. And then he just like keeps asking randomly throughout like the training montages and stuff. And then it goes away for a bit until Ruzioni brings it back.
That's one thing that's affected me negatively in real life. Lacrosse in high school, our one coach, Murphy, every time we'd do conditioning, we'd get through like probably like 7 or 8 of them. And then he'd just wait. He would just keep running you until somebody would, or like the whole team would say one more.
Yeah.
One more. And that's what you just wait for. And it was like,
that's
you
bullshit.
Don't need, yeah.
That isn't the same. That is a fucking abusive garbage coach. We don't need to get into our bad high school lacrosse coaches. The movie just, it nails those moments. I mean, that whole scene if there's one like big scene that everyone takes away from Miracle, whenever you talk to somebody about it, it comes up. It is that scene, the one more scene.
Yep.
Because that's when Craig questions his coaching, because he's like, it's him and the trainer, and they're just like, they finally are like, they're starting to voice their concern, like, this has gone on long enough, you need to stop. And they're just like whole time giving each other glances. He's hesitant to blow the whistle, but they never, what's also great about that is they never fully lose faith in Herb. Like, neither of them walk out, neither of them like truly butt in to stop it. Nope. They just voice their concern.
Yeah, the and doctor then, says.
Yeah.
The rink manager's got to go home, blah, blah, blah. He wants to go home. He wants to clean up. And he says, tell him to leave me the keys.
And then, like, when the lights shut off and they all think they finally get to go home, and he's like, one more. And he just won't stop. It's good. It's really good if you've ever had a hard-ass coach who's ran you like that. But, like, the good kind. Like,
yeah.
We had one my freshman year of high school when Murphy couldn't coach because his doctor was like, if you coach, you're probably going to die because your heart sucks. We had Cost, and he was this young guy, like, fresh out of law school. And he came and coached us, and he was the best. And we would do those, like, fucking line-to-line wind sprints. That sucked. But he was, like, the best guy, too. So he would run us hard in these practices, and you hate him in that moment. Oh, it sucks so bad. But, it works. We went 15-1 that season. We lost one game. And, like, on the team we lost to were, like, four kids who went D1 lacrosse. I really like that, and I like that dynamic because one of the things that I like with the sport like hockey and is often the opposite in something like football is Herb Brooks isn't their dad. Herb Brooks is their fucking coach. He is not there to coddle them. He's not there to be their friend. He's there to make them winners. I feel like something you see a lot in football with a lot of these things is coaches trying to be like father figures to their players. And it's like it's weird. But in hockey, it's just the coaches know I'm here to win. I'm not here to make friends. I'm not here to have a whole new group of kids to love me. We need to win.
Yeah.
And if we win, they will love me more than they ever could if we didn't win. Because that's the thing. Because once they win, you realize everything he did, good or bad, led you to win. And that's something you get really good with Herb Brooks. Herb Brooks is just a great coach to study in sports in general because he's great at bringing the love and the hate.
Yep.
Which it's awesome. And Kurt Russell nails it. So, I mean.
Absolutely.
The movie's amazing.
Perfect guy for that role.
So, yeah, that's Miracle, 1980 Olympic Games. And that's in Lake Placid, where I just was recently. Which the Olympics will never be at again. Just driving out there like, yeah, it'll never be here again. It's amazing they even had it there in the 80s. It is not an easy place to get to, and it is not a big place. but, love it. And like our dad always talks about, this is a game he remembers very vividly because he remembers when the Sabres played an exhibition game against them, and I think he went to
against
it.
Against the Red Army, yeah.
Yes.
Because he tells the story how he used to go in the back entrance at the odd because it was closer to their seats, and when they were about to go in, they pulled the gate across because it was from the locker room to the ice, and the Red Army walked by, and I remember him telling me how all the guys were like 6'4", 6'5", and then they're on skates, so add another 3 inches. So he's just looking up.
And our dad is like 6'3", himself. Yeah. He's almost 6'3". He's taller than both of us, and we're like 6'1", 6'1 and a half.
Yeah.
He's a big guy. So when we look up at people, you know they're pretty big.
Exactly. And he said the only other time he's felt that small was standing next to John Scott.
Yeah, another geez, monster.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Those Russians were nuts. This, so good. See Miracle if you haven't seen Miracle somehow by now. We grew up, we're in Buffalo, so we're in Hockey Town, USA.
Especially with those Olympics being in Lake Placid, too.
Yeah.
And our dad being as big of a Sabre or sports fan in general as he was. Especially because a couple of the guys, I think, played for the Sabres.
Yes, there is definitely Buffalo ties in those Olympics and that team. So, yeah, we've known this story well for most of our lives. But if you're more in the South and it's something you haven't for some reason haven't seen, Kurt Russell alone should be enough to guide you in because he never does any wrong. But the movie is just incredible. I love it. Watching it again every moment, so good. But moving on from that, because it's not even the best Winter Olympics movie ever made.
I don't think so.
Even though it may be about the best Winter Olympics moment ever, it is not the best Winter Olympics movie ever made. The best Winter Olympics movie ever made came out in 1993, and I think a lot of people know what we're going to be talking about. It's John Turteltaub's Cool Runnings. Jamaica,
dreadlocks, let me kiss your lucky egg.
Next team up is Jamaica.
All right, fellas, that's us. Let's go. Here we go. Today's our day. This is it. Come on, guys. We can do it. The race. See you at the finish line.
With the kinds of push starts these guys are capable of, we might actually see the Jamaicans win an Olympic medal. So this is it. We could see history in the making.
Feel the rhythm. Feel the rhyme. Get on up. It's bobsled time.
I mean, everybody knows. It's the story of the Jamaican bobsled, the first Jamaican bobsled team going to the Olympics in 1998 in Calgary.
Yeah.
3-4 months before the Olympics, Jamaican sprinter goes down in a qualifier, misses his shot at the Olympics. So they seek out Irv Blitzer, who's a disgraced bobsledder, American bobsledder, to coach them and send them to the Olympics as a bobsled team. Because he once at one time had this crazy idea of using Jamaican track sprinters to bobsled because of their quick launch speed as sprinters. Yeah. They could get off the line quicker and thus have a much faster start than anyone else, giving them an edge. Only one problem, as you can imagine, no snow, no hills, really, in Jamaica for them to be bobsledders. They're in a tropical paradise.
Yep.
So the movie is the story of them learning to be bobsledders in this tropical paradise, and then going to the 1998 Winter Olympics with almost no qualifications, and becoming qualifying bobsledders and competing in the Olympics as the first ever Jamaican bobsled team. Yeah, everyone knows the story.
Yeah.
I get shocked when people haven't seen this movie. It's one of those ones because it's just been with us for so long and we've seen it so many times.
We've seen it.
Yeah. So when people say they haven't, I'm shocked. Like one of my roommates hadn't seen it until I showed it to her. So like, but it had shocked me when I'd found that out because like we've just seen this movie so many times.
It's like, I grew up on this. How do you not know it?
Yeah. So John Turteltaub directs. You get John Candy as Irv Blitzer, and John Candy, obviously, oh, rest in peace, the guy was a goddamn legend.
Yeah.
And he's so good in this movie, getting to play, as he often gets to do when you actually look back on his career, especially his smaller parts in movies like Home Alone, or obviously his role in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and this. He's very funny, but he's always his characters are often very complex.
Yep.
Like, when you actually dig very down serious. And think about them, there's a lot of lot going on there. And you get Leon as Dries Bannick, Dougie Doug, Sanka Coffey, Raleigh D. Lewis as Junior Bevel, and Malik Yoba as Yul Brynner. That's your main cast. Nobody else in the movie really matters. I love this movie.
I know.
It's great. From them training in Jamaica to them going to Calgary for the first time. Because those are basically your three acts. Act one, training in Jamaica. Act two, getting to Calgary, learning about Calgary and the weather,
qualifications,
training, like learning to run on ice, and then the final act is competition.
Yeah, the final Olympic try.
Because they get two runs.
Olympic.
That they get. So that's basically the end of your movie, and like there's a little bit of drama stuff going on in between, obviously. But it's super entertaining. It's hilarious. It's endlessly quotable. It's a feel good sports movie. It's a great story. The story itself is so famous, but like, I quote this movie for days.
Yeah.
Sanka Coffey is just incredible. I'm number one pushcart driver in all of Jamaica. I must drive.
When they first go to find John Candy as a bookie at the one pool hall, and he goes to the bathroom because he's like trying to get away from him, and he goes to the bathroom and he opens the stall door and there's Sanka and Therese just sitting in the stall, and Sanka goes, "Greetings, Sled God,"
which is his little nickname for him the rest of the movie, which Sled I God. Love. Okay, Sled God. Oh, it's so good. You want to kiss my lucky egg?
Yeah.
Sanka Coffey has so much going on in this movie. He is incredible. He's fantastic. I love that character. Because he's also, because Sanka Coffey, you have Dries Bannick, Junior Bevel, and Yul Brynner are three Olympic sprinters.
Yeah.
Sanka Coffey is a pushcart driver, which is basically just these goofy-ass go-karts they build in Jamaica where a kid lays on the front of it and then there's an adult steers from the back.
Yeah.
It's called pushcart. And he is a friend of Dries, and Dries brings him on because he wants him to be the driver. Which is where you get the great line, because it's when Irv tells him he's not going to be the driver, he's going to be the brake man. Sanka Coffey, I'm number one pushcart driver in all of Jamaica. I must drive. And he's just this goofy, out-of-this-world, outlandish character. And he's also, like, you can tell he's just kind of like the Jamaican beach bum. He's kind of like, he isn't the track star. He's just this guy who loves to chill and live his life in Jamaica, and they get him in on this, And he's just, he's so funny. When they first show up in Calgary and they're out, and Dorice looks at him and he goes, "Yo, Senka, what you smoking?" He goes, "I'm not smoking. I'm breathing." They all go get bundled up at the store. It's again, like Miracle, casts very well. John Candy is there. And so we're going to talk about this again with the last movie, which ties into this as well. But what all three of these movies do really well and unexpectedly is they cast a very well-known actor and well-respected actor in the, like, lead coach role, which is, like, the complex, like, heavier role of the movie. And every time it's kind of an unexpected person. John Candy for Irv Blitzer in the early 90s. I mean, he's been doing John Hughes comedies and stuff like that. Kurt Russell at Miracle. I mean, he's away from his 80s and early 90s Kurt Russell self, but I mean, when you do movies like Escape from New York and Big Trouble in Little China and Captain Ron, like, you have an air about you that's hard to just forget. And he steps into that role and crushes it. And that's exactly what John Candy does here. He's really, really funny. He's a little heartbreaking. He's also very lovable. He gets to handle, like, all of the emotional heavier moments in the movie. For the most part, there are some, the guys get to do some great stuff, but, like, he gets the great moment with the Olympic guys, where he basically calls them out for being insecure about four black guys and a bobsled.
Yep.
Like, and that's, like, this movie doesn't call it out as much as, like, Miracle uses its social and political stuff around it for its story, but it does have that one moment where it reminds you that the reason this was an issue isn't necessarily because of where they come from, like, because they're unqualified.
Yeah.
There was other intentions behind it. Yeah. Because with...
They say they don't want it to be... They don't want to embarrass the sport.
Yes.
Which is like, all right, seriously?
Yes. So that's like, he gets great moments like that. Obviously, he's the, like, he is a disgraced bobsledder because he had hit weights in his sled when he was doing it. Yep. So, like, you get a lot of complexities with his character, which is nice. But you do get stuff like Junior has a cool, is the good story with his dad, which leads to the great moment with Yul Brynner in front of the mirror.
Yeah.
What do you see? I see Brad. I see power. I see a badass mother who don't take no crap from no one. Say it again. That is, talk about just like a feel good uplifting moment, because that's when Junior finally just like becomes himself, and then later that scene finally tells his dad off.
Yeah.
Which is great, because then in the end of the movie, granted, I didn't do fact checking with all of these like I did with Italian to find out what's real, what's fake, but we're talking about the movies and movie wise, it's a great thing, because at the end of the movie, when you get to the payoff, his dad is in the crowd clapping and proud of his son for doing what he did.
Most of this was fictional, by the way.
Yeah.
None of these characters are real.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I looked up the names of the real bobsled team, and none of them match up.
I'm not that surprised.
I think two of the people in the on the actual team were brothers, which I think is supposed to be Sanka and Doris.
Yeah, it would make sense.
Like, that's kind of what they're supposed to represent, but obviously in the film they're not like portrayed as brothers. But they are close, like they brothers could be.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the way they kind of twisted this event into the movie, they did a really good job with it. They make you care about the movie the whole time.
I mean, that's what movies do. You make a story more interesting than it is often.
I was reading, apparently, when they first had come up with the movie and they had cast everybody, the idea was to make it into a serious movie. And they hadn't decided, they hadn't really thrown in a lot of comedy until they had brought on the director who's given credit for the film. So that was kind of cool. I thought that they threw on the comedy after the fact of coming up with this idea to make a movie about the Jamaican bobsled team.
Yeah. I mean, it's John Turteltaub. It's Mr. National Treasure himself. So the dude knows what he's doing. despite its falsehoods and how it's exaggerating a story, it does it for the better, because it is, I mean, it's a feel-good inspirational sports story. You get them showing up at the Olympics and then, like, Dury wanting to imitate the Swiss team, and then they have to find their own identity, which is a great moment when they go out and they feel the rhythm, feel the rhyme, get on up, it's bobsled time, cool runnings. Is just great, and obviously a slogan for the movie. It's an easy movie to love. We're suckers for sports biopics in general.
Absolutely.
Throw it in the Winter Games. It's guys out of their element and in the winter, which is fun. When you live in Buffalo, you get amused by people who don't get to see the cold being in the cold. We were just in Virginia last weekend, and it snowed like an inch and a half. And we walked out of this museum, and it was like a bunch of people were having an epiphany. They were taking pictures. They were going nuts.
There was not even two inches of snow.
It was like slush. It was barely snow. And they were like, these people were like going nuts. This is amazing. People were acting like they've just seen Christ descend from the skies. And it's like, yo, we get this in like five minutes in Buffalo.
It's February. What's going on? Why are you so amazed?
Yeah, it's great. I don't know. This movie kind of speaks for itself. It's so good. Endlessly quotable. You want to kiss my lucky egg?
It's a fun loving movie feel good movie. I think everybody who watches this would love it.
Most people in our generation have definitely seen it.
Not a slow-paced movie.
No. I mean, it's actually, Miracle is like 2 hours, 10 minutes long. It's the longest of them all, but you don't feel it because you have like the long hockey sequence and stuff. This movie and the one we're about to talk about are both right about 1 hour and 40 minutes. They pick their sweet spot. They know the story they're trying to tell. Yeah. I think the next movie too also does some exaggerating to make the story a little more interesting, but again, it's also very similar, and we might as well move right into that because we're going to end up talking more about Cool Runnings with it as well. And this is a recent movie. This is not one we grew up with, but we have to talk about it. Lucas has just seen it for the first time. I
saw it last week for the first time.
Shortly after it came out and immediately fell in love. And it's 2016's Eddie the Eagle, directed by Dexter Fletcher.
For as long as I can remember, it has been my ambition to become an Olympian. Yeah.
Eddie, you are not an athlete.
I just needed to find the right sport.
Britain hasn't had a ski jumper since 1929.
I'm going to be a ski jumper.
He's going to break his neck.
I'm going to break his neck.
The time to start jumping is when you're 5 or 6.
Again, taking place at the 1988 Olympic Games in Calgary. So there's your first connection between the last movie and this one is two crazy stories, the same Olympics.
They even go as far as referencing the Jamaican bobsled team in Eddie the Eagle.
Yes. So, Eddie the Eagle. Dexter Fletcher is the director. Big fan of this guy. You'd recognize him. He's been an actor in some stuff. He's one of the henchmen in the first Kick-Ass.
Oh.
He's popped up in a couple of the British movies. And now he's trying his hand at directing. And Eddie the Eagle is one of his first movies.
Okay, he does look a little familiar.
So it's the story of Eddie Edwards, who was a British kid, is a British guy. And when he was a kid, his only dream was to be in the Olympics. No matter what it took.
Yep.
He was like the opening of the movie is great. It's a montage of this kid like trying to figure out what Olympic event he can do until he kind of stumbles into skiing initially, and he wants to do like downhill skiing. Eddie is interesting. Eddie's kind of a weirdo. He's a quirky dude. He's an oddball. But very lovable, but he's an oddball. And as we've mentioned last week's episode and this week's episode, Olympic committees suck.
Yeah.
And a lot, especially back in through up until the turn of the century, and still to this day, even a lot of the Olympics was about image. So they would care if you were an oddball. It didn't matter how good he could have been, incredible, and they still would have had reservations of sending him because of how oddball he was. And he basically, he's not going to get to be on the downhill ski team. They basically shunned him out of that. And then
they tell him, he says, you're just not Olympic material.
Yep. So he finds a loophole. He realizes that there's no British ski jumpers.
Yep.
At least not since like, it's like 1926. So there hasn't been a British ski jumper. So he decides, this is my last shot. I'm going to train to be a ski jumper and go to the Olympics. And all he has to do is make a qualifying distance, which I think when he first looks into it is like 49 meters. And by the time he actually has to go is
61
meters. And he goes out to Germany to this like training facility to start training himself to become a ski jumper. And that's where he meets Bronson Perry, who's a disgraced U.S. Olympic ski jumper. Sound familiar, Irv Blitzer? They're basically the same character in a sense, as they were both greats at their sport at one time in America. disgraced for one reason or another, and now they're in this random place,
yep,
just living a life. In this case, Bronson is actually still close to the sport because he is kind of like the groundskeeper and maintenance guy to this training facility.
Yeah. Whereas Irving Blitzen was, he says, I don't want to be within 2,000 miles of anybody that even wants to be a bobsledder.
And that's why he's in Jamaica yeah. as a bookie. But Bronson Perry has a drinking problem. He's pretty cranky and he does not want to coach Eddie Edwards. And at first he very adamantly refuses him until Eddie just kind of forces himself into his into his life as a coach and forces him forces Bronson to love him and basically just want to see him do good.
Basically, he forced him to be his coach by almost killing himself on the ski jumps by just jumping off the bigger ski jump without any real practice. And he goes, you better knock that off. I don't want to be cleaning up your body off the slopes. And then he just continues to do it until he ends up finally agreeing to be his coach.
Well, and that's one of the things we didn't really get to with Cool Runnings either, but is echoed in this. And what I like about both these movies is the sport they're dealing with are fucking, they're crazy. Like,
yeah.
Bobsledding is nuts and super dangerous. And ski jumping is insane.
Yeah.
It's, and like, so...
they're flying hundreds of meters.
Like, yeah, so like you get a lot of that in Cool Runnings with how intense it is, but when you get into this movie, he is a year out from the Olympics. He's never done a ski jump before in his life. The moment he gets to the facility, all he's being told is if you're going to be a ski jumper, you need to start when you're like 4 years old,
yeah.
Basically. It's like this is something you start when you are a young child, and it is a lifetime pursuit. And he does not let that stop him. He is just ready to dive headfirst into this. And he goes on the baby jump. He's trying it. He falls down. Like, first time. Or no, doesn't he land his first one off the baby?
He lands his first time.
So he gets super cocky.
Yeah.
Goes up to the 40 or 70.
No, 40.
40 meter. And that's when he basically dies for the first time. Eats shit hard.
He just has a bruise in the end.
Yeah, just has a bruise in the end. Dude's, I mean, guy's basically daredevil, tough as nails.
Yeah.
But the movie is very much playing up how insane the sport of ski jumping is, how dangerous the sport of ski jumping is. That's like half the movie is just talking about how insane this sport is.
At one point when Hugh Jackman finally, he like half agrees to be his coach, he's out there still plowing the snow and He looks up at the ski jumper and he goes, watch him. He's the number two ski jumper in all the world. And the dude eats shit.
Yep, and has to get taken off on a stretcher.
He goes, and he's the second best.
Yeah, it's a crazy sport. It's nuts. I don't know how people do it. The movie is a really good, it's really good. So basically, he makes his qualifier. I think he like makes the first qualifier, and that's when he goes to the Olympic Committee, and they're like, "No, we've extended. It's now 61 meters."
Yep.
So he has to go on the circuit, and that's where he basically finally convinces Bronson to be his coach because he joins him on the road. They go and do the events, and he almost and it's one of those great things because it's like the final one. He doesn't he makes 61 meters in trials, doesn't make it in the official competition. Kind of gives his plea to the judges afterwards on his way out, which is a really nice moment. And a week later, when he gets his official record, they gave him his trial distance so he can go to the Olympics.
What's the one thing the judges say? It was just kind of a funny moment. He says, "We do everything by the paper or whatever."
Yeah.
I forget exactly what the quote was, but basically saying, "We are strict to the guidelines. We write everything down." That's what he's kind of pissed at, but in the end, that's what saves his ass because they recorded his qualifying jump of 61.
Eddie is very good at pleading his case and making it be known why he should be allowed to do this. One of the things that I think is really interesting about this movie, before getting into like the meat of it and like the ending of it and everything where it goes, is his relationship with Bronson, especially after the circuit. Because when they first leave the circuit, he thinks he doesn't have the distance. So they're kind of like, just this is it. We're not going to the Olympics this time. And Bronson's like, well, you can do this. I can train you to actually be a good ski jumper. And he wants – and now he's like
in 4 years,
let's go.
We can compete.
Yeah. And then when he gets his official distance and he can go, Bronson still is like, you don't go. Like, I can make you a good ski jumper. And it's just part of this movie that isn't – it's there. And they put it in your mind because – it's there for that short time, but then Bronson shows up at the Olympics.
Yeah.
And once he decides he's actually just going to go, and he shows up and he helps him out because once he is decides he's going to do. Is it the 70 meter, the big one?
No, the 90 meter.
That's what I thought. 90 is the big one. When he decides he's going to do the 90, he's going to help him at least do what he can to get him ready for it and come and support him. So you kind of forget about that in the end, that like he really wanted to make him a champion. And like Eddie never went back to the Olympics because, one, they went and changed the guidelines for what qualifications to get there, so he couldn't really get there easily. Whereas Bronson would have, like, it would have been interesting to see what had happened with a guy like him if he had just taken that 4 years off and trained.
Yeah.
But in the end, he has this great, inspirational, awesome story that's one of a kind and nuts. And, I mean, he probably would have never made an impact like that. He
may
have
maybe
won a bronze medal at some point, but he wouldn't have been remembered the way he is remembered.
Probably wouldn't have a movie made about him.
Yeah. So this, I mean, we talked about a lot with Miracle, them, like how they portray the hockey and stuff. One thing I really liked in Eddie Eagle is the jumps themselves. Pretty clearly, there's a lot of digital work being done there, a lot of CGI. It's not practical ski jumps.
Yeah,
but it looks really good, and I think they do a really good job of getting the intensity of the jumps themselves, from going down those runs to how fast you're going in the air with the wind and things like that. They really get the impact of how terrifying of a sport this is.
Oh, yeah. They definitely put like a camera on a track down the side of the slope and just would send it off, and because then you can actually feel like the momentum they carry when they're hitting
and
the bottom of the jump.
They do not shy away when someone falls. It is punishing. You hear it. It is,
it's terrifying.
It, yeah, you hear it. You're like, oh man.
It just, I don't like it.
It sounds terrible. It does not sound fun. But it ends up being a really like great feel-good movie. You get this. I mean, Bronson gets his own little redemption arc with his old coach at the Olympics. And Eddie goes. He competes. And he becomes this like sensation because he lands his first, is it 40 or 70? I can't remember what the one it's that he the smaller one is.
The 40.
Is it 40?
Or 50 maybe.
Maybe 50. And he when he lands it and he sets a British world record and he starts. That's when he becomes like. People love him now because he flips out and he starts going crazy and he gets in the face of the camera. He's like, I broke a British world record.
And he's flapping his wings.
Yeah, and he does the eagle thing, and that's where the nickname comes from. And it's this really great moment. And he just becomes like sensationalized after that.
And that's when all the media wants to talk to him, and the Olympic Committee for England is like, no, you're going to embarrass us, blah, blah, blah.
But I love that moment, the moments of that, because like he goes to the media, he loves that people are loving him, but then he also gets... from with like the people are loving him, but he's getting a stink from within the Olympics that people are saying he's an embarrassment, he's a joke, and that's why he decides to do the 90. He's like, well, I'm gonna prove I deserve to be here, and I'm not just a joke. I'm not just here to amuse you. I'm here to compete. And he
does. Because I think even Jackman calls him and is like, what are you doing?
Yeah, you're making an ass of yourself. So he's like, I'm here to compete. I'm not here to make a mockery of this. I am here to have fun, but I am here to be a serious competitor, and that leads him to do the 90. And man, it's because so we didn't talk about it with Cool Runnings either. Is these final moments are just so feel good. Like you have Cool Runnings because they obviously their final run, they crash and then they all pick up. Is this true or not? Did they actually pick up their sled?
So they did crash. They didn't actually pick up the sled. They just kind of pushed it at the end.
Okay.
But when you push it to the end of the thing, you have to pick it up and take it off the rack. So they do end up technically picking it up and taking it away. But they didn't carry it on their shoulders all the way down the track.
Man, great movie moment, though. When they come walking over that horizon with it over their shoulders, and it's just so feel good. And then the end of this with the final jump is just, it's great. I mean, it's everything you want it to be. And I don't know, I just... The minute this movie ended, I had the biggest smile on my face.
No,
It's just like I instantly knew I loved it. It's very similar to Cool Runnings in the way it has like the comedy and the quirkiness, but it also brings the heart. And it just the ending packs a punch and makes you feel so good.
Yeah, and Eddie's a character that is very easy to side with, fall in love with, even.
Yes, played by Taron Egerton, which we never did say.
Yeah.
From Kingsman, and he is so good in this movie.
Fantastic.
He is great as Eddie.
I loved him immediately, obviously, because 8th grade, when I first decided to start snowboarding and I joined the ski club, I didn't have any snowboard goggles, and our mom lent us a pair that she used to use in the 80s, bright pink goggles with, like, baby blue and pink strap. So it looked like cotton candy. I was, and I back then I was like, these things are awesome. And then of course I go to watch this movie last week, and what kind of goggles is Eddie the Eagle wearing? He's got the same exact damn pair. And I was like, freaking out. I like ran down and I was like, Mom, did you know your goggles are what Eddie the Eagle used to wear? And I like looked it up, and those were the goggles he actually used, like, yeah, in the Rio Olympics. I thought it was awesome.
That's awesome. That's so funny. I just, before we kind of wrap this up, I have one more moment in this movie I want to talk about, because it might, I don't know if it's my favorite moment of any of these movies, because they have some really strong moments, but this moment, I just love it so much. And it's at the end of the movie when he's going up the elevator with the, is he a Swiss jumper?
The flying Finn.
The number one ranked ski jumper, the guy, and they're going up, and he keeps talking about how much he respects Eddie, because they're the only two there who are truly competing, because they're competing against themselves to do better than they've ever done before. Yep. They're not here to do better than the next guy. They're here to do better than themselves. Because he's already the number one ski jumper in the world.
Yep.
He's here to beat himself. Eddie's here to prove it to himself, to beat himself and show he can do it. So they're like, it's this great connection. And it's like this Finn giving this really good moment. But because of the way the movie is played, you're kind of unsure. And Eddie is definitely unsure. And Eddie's like,
yeah,
are you messing with me, like, man?
The delivery from him, and like, because obviously English is not his first language, and like the way he speaks to him.
He just kind of always has his nose up in the air, this guy. Yeah. Because he's the number one ski jumper in the world. So he's got an air to him. He's very cocky.
Yeah.
But he's also, what I love about that moment too, is it shows he's a good, like, one, he's a good dude, and it's a guy you, like, the whole movie, they kind of just keep showing from a distance as the best jumper.
Well, yeah.
You assume there's going to be a moment kind of like in Cool Runnings where they meet and he just kind of makes fun of him. Like happens with other jumpers.
No, that happens at the beginning of the movie.
Is it?
When he first gets to Germany, because obviously he knows who Maddie is, the Flying Finn, and he goes up to him and he's like, you're the Flying Finn, you're Maddie, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, and he says, do you want my autograph? Or he's like, did you want an autograph? And he goes, oh, yeah, sure. And he's like, grabs the pencil from the one coach, and he like asks him to sign his bus ticket, and he just kind of laughs and walks away.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that's, I don't know, that elevator scene, I really like it. It's just two competitors at their best moments, and a great moment for, like, with which all three of these movies do, which is like, why sports can be great. Like, yes, it's why it's often very much more than just the game itself. Like, sports are, people have sports in their lives for many reasons besides they're just fun.
Yeah.
And these movies are, especially when it comes to doing it with the Olympics, because obviously there's so much more on top of just playing the sport. You're representing your country. There's all these other factors.
Exactly.
It's an easy outlet for that, but all three of these movies nail it. And I'm always down for Winter Olympic movies, man. Give me all the stories. There's so many. I mean, anyone who's been watching this year, there's been like 15 stories you've heard that could be movies from these people, that are all really cool. You have the one speed skating girl from the U.S. who hadn't even speed skated till like 4 months ago. She was a roller derby chick, and she's now out in speed skating as the U.S. Olympic athlete, which is awesome. Like,
yeah, very cool.
Such
that was
cool
another like
that.
Pick up the sport in 3 months thing. Obviously, like Red Gerard, 17-year-old kid, or Chloe Kim. Who else do we got? Sapolsky for the U.S., the goalie. He was a walk-on to Mercyhurst College in Erie, Pennsylvania.
The Korean hockey team. I mean, there's a lot from, like, the Koreans. Team. Like, not just U.S., there's been so many stories. I mean, the Korean hockey team, the Korean skaters.
The Jamaican female bobsled team, whose coach took away their bobsled when she left.
Did you realize? She didn't, like, take it away. It was, like, a whole weird, like, situation that, like, because she was responsible for the sled, so she couldn't just leave it because if anything happened to it, she's responsible. It was like a really weird legal situation.
I heard they weren't very fond of this coach, though.
Yeah, and they parted ways, but like the sled was legally under her name, so like she had, it was a really weird thing. I don't think she necessarily took the sled to be like, screw you guys, you don't get to compete.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of that. She definitely didn't make an effort to make it easier for them to compete.
No, not at all.
But it's a weird story.
Yeah, and then for those of you who haven't heard, Red Stripe ended up through Twitter saying that they would foot the bill for a new sled, and they ended up paying for a new sled for the female bobsled team, which I thought was awesome.
So they still got to compete, which was great. The Olympics are awesome. I love it.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah. Sad it's all coming to an end.
It is.
Another 4 years. Summer games are boring, man.
Yeah.
They suck.
Hopefully we'll get a little more television or televised skateboarding in the Summer
Olympics. Yes, they need to get more into that. I want to see more of
more
that.
More action sports.
Yeah, get more into those action sports. Extreme sports for the win, man. They're the best. Yeah, so...
So one more thing I want to say about like Eddie the Eagle and Cool Runnings. The Olympic Committee, they always kind of portray them as like... they don't want to be here, or like they shouldn't be here, whatever, blah blah blah, and like the athletes are all kind of looking down upon them and kind of making fun of them. Actually, in like the 1988 Olympics, at the actual Olympics in Calgary, a lot of the teams were very welcoming of the Jamaicans, and there's a two-man team for the Jamaicans, and they didn't involve any of the guys who were on the four-man, so it was two separate athletes. So that was kind of cool. I don't know specifically about Eddie the Eagle, if them not wanting to send him to the Olympics was true or not, but in Cool Runnings they kind of are like, we don't want you to go to the Olympics. You're going to embarrass our country, blah, 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 which I guess wasn't the case at all. It's another dramatization for the film industry, but it's kind of cool to hear that they weren't actually shunned out. They were welcome.
Like, yeah.
This Olympic bobsled team from Jamaica. So that's a cool thing that just kind of I would throw in there.
Yeah. I mean, sure, the Olympic Committee still sucked. They all suck.
Yeah.
As we've learned obviously very much this year. So yeah, that's pretty much, that's all we have. That's our Winter Olympics 2018 coverage from Tales from the Bunk Bed. It was a good Olympics. I'm excited to watch the closing of it this weekend. What do we have in store for the next episode, which will drop at some point in the future? We're making no guarantees anymore, guys.
So we got snowboarding as our kind of a broad topic.
A blanket topic here. We're gonna blanket statement this one. So we're trying something a little different.
Talk about personal experiences with snowboarding ourselves, video games, movies,
hella movies, guys,
TV shows, whatever,
hella like, stuff.
We're gonna cover a lot. So just be prepared if you're a big snowboarding guy or you like hearing about it.
But I'm hoping to do with this, because we're trying something different here, is we want to make it so this is interesting to listen to even if you don't snowboard.
Yes.
So we're not going to be sitting here talking all snowboard technicals and shit, so you just like think we're speaking gibberish and don't know what we're saying. We want to just talk about it in a way that's entertaining and amusing, which is why we're also going to be talking a lot about entertainment. But we have a lot of stuff involved with it, mostly video games and movies, so a few other things, and then obviously our real-life experiences. But it should be really fun. I'm really looking forward to trying this out. We should have it up sometime in the next 2 weeks. We'd like it at least before it starts being super warm all the time and there's no more winter weather. But that's going to be coming soon, and we're pretty excited about it.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one to do. I know we've talked about it a lot, but I'm sure you'll have stuff to tell me, and I'll have stuff to tell you that we haven't told each other before.
Yeah, we both did lots of ski club without each other.
Yeah.
So look forward to that at some point in the future. Where can everybody find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Lazaro895, Lazaro895.
Cool. Find me on Twitter anytime at ZACH Zach WW Movies. Instagram, Zach Who Watches Movies. Also follow my other new Instagram account, Zach Who Draws Stuff, because I draw stuff now and it's fun.
You've been doing a good job,
So check all that nonsense out and listen to this podcast. Go over to iTunes, rate and review us, give us some stuff. We'll see you guys later.